This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Has it been a week already? My goodness, time does fly. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I couldn't be better. You sound like you have a little cold here this morning.
Same cold I had last week when I talked.
Yeah.
Every year you get colds, and if you treat them, they go away in a week, and if you don't, they go away in 7 days. That's been my experience.
Oh, you're too much.
Everyone's all taking aspirin, but you just sleep, a lot of fluids and sleep.
You certainly stirred the pot with your soda size, the story of the cup and its size when it comes to soda. Yesterday in Washington, there was a get-together. I understand your health commissioner, Tom Farley, was down
there. I read that in the paper. I didn't know he was down there. Yeah. But I also just read on the news that Seattle looks like they're going to ban large drinks. We didn't ban anything.
Right.
It's fascinating. For one speech, the amount of media coverage across the country, I mean, most people who want to get coverage would just die for that, and it costs your fortune. Political campaigns could never afford to get that
much. You've been called all sorts of names, though.
Yeah, but in a nice way. People understand, they might not agree with you, but it's kind of hard to argue you're not trying to do something. Obesity is an enormous problem. In New York City, 60% of adults and 40% of children are overweight or obese. And in the Bronx, for example, it's 70%. I have a friend who travels a lot all across the country, all cities. And he says he thinks that the average family is approaching 1,000 pounds.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
He said, you see the parents overweight and you see the kids overweight. And it's in New York City, by comparison, we're better. But obesity is going to kill 6,000 people, or estimates of 5,800 this year. In New York City, smoking is down to 7,000. So this is the second largest killer in the city. And people say, oh, well, it's not my problem. It costs $4 billion in New York City to treat obesity. And the proposal we made is, which I hope the Board of Health will approve.
Is that the entity that needs
that has to do it, right? And then there's a comment period, and then they have to listen and say yes or no again. The only thing that we've suggested is that in restaurants and movie theaters and carts, because we don't regulate stores, that's the state, but we regulate restaurants.
Like a McDonald's or something, you do not. Oh, that's a restaurant.
No, it's a restaurant. No, you do. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
But a 7-Eleven, you don't.
It depends on the percentage of food of their revenues that come from food that you eat or food that you take home. I mean, so even that, there's a law about it. Generally, I don't know 7-Elevens. Maybe they're...
Okay.
I just don't know which they are. And maybe it even varies depending on the 7-Eleven, how big and what they stock and that sort of thing. But the only proposal is for those that for full sugar drinks, if you order more than 16 ounces, they put it in at least 2 cups. So if you want 32 ounces, you can get it. Just say, give me 30. They can charge the same price for 32 ounces. They just got to put them in 2 cups. For some people, this is the end of the first of civil rights as we know it. I mean, let's get serious here. And the whole idea is just to remind you that you're drinking a lot.
But you do understand the argument about the nanny state and all of that. And that's the gut reaction.
Absolutely. Now, keep in mind, we regulate alcoholic beverages. We regulate smoking. We regulate food, trans fats. We regulate requiring calories on the back of all packaged goods. All the regulations in making your food. Are you kidding me? This is you couldn't never read the number of regulations. Just if you sat down and spent a lifetime reading them, much less following them. So this is not anything, and everything in those stores and restaurants are regulated, including cleanliness and a whole lot of stuff. So all this is just a way to remind you. And you say, why does it make a difference? All the studies show that you will eat what's in front of you, and that has a big
till
it's gone. So if I gave you a small sandwich and said, would you like another one, your likelihood of saying yes or no is exactly the same as if I gave you a big sandwich to eat. And if there's a great, I love the soup test that the public health people do. They give you a bowl of soup and eat it and say, do you want another one? Most people would say, no, I've had one, thank you very much. They then bring you in another day, and they give you a bowl of soup. But this time, you don't know there's a tube under the table, through the table, into the bottom of the bowl. And as fast, as much as you eat, it keeps filling, and you don't see it doing that. And you'll sit there and eat for half an hour. So, you know, just by reminding people, maybe they'll drink less. If they still want to, you're not taking away anybody's right. You're not hurting the stores at all. The cost of an extra cup isn't a big deal. And most, in the case of full sugar drinks or of sodas, the olden days when you and I grew up, 6.5 ounces was the average one. One of the big beverage companies has this big ad, which was a very famous ad, showing Happy Family. 16 ounces in a big letters, serves three. So, and that's why what's happened in this country, we are supersizing ourselves into an enormous problem. And government's got a responsibility to do something. I, for example, have never thought that you don't have a right to smoke. You want to smoke, I get crazy, but I have resisted everybody that's wanted me to push a ban on smoking. I do think we shouldn't allow you to smoke when somebody else has to breathe your smoke. I do think we can have reasonable regulations, like don't sell cigarettes to kids. But if you want to smoke, you should. And if you want to drink 32 ounces or 64 ounces, that's up to you. We should not be in that business. But telling you the problem, and this is just another way, it's another kind of advertising or information up on the wall. This is an information in front of you that really has more impact.
Any truth to the rumor that the picture of you dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire now hangs in the mayor's office?
It does not. But I said I was with Oscar De La Renta, who's a close friend of mine, the other day, and he said he would never have made that dress for me. He didn't think it was quite my style.
It didn't fit you.
If I, you know, if I ever wanted to wear De La Renta, this would not be the one.
All right. Let's see here. You know what? Let me take my first break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the decriminalization of marijuana as the mayor makes himself feel better. 16, that's all right. 16 minutes after 8 o'clock. Be right back. We continue here on the John Gambling Show. It's a Friday get-together. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and we would like you to get together with us, too. Got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. You better get in line now, 800-321-0710. Big sports weekend. We got the Mets and the Yankees going.
You have no idea. You have just no idea how many sports things. There are five big events in the metropolitan area. The Belmont Stakes. I'll have another is bidding for the Triple Crown, so everybody's gung-ho. We have a world-class track and field meet, the Adidas Grand Prix at the Icahn Stadium and Randall's Island, and an exhibition soccer match between two of the game's great rivals, and game five of the Stanley Cup between the Devils and the Los Angeles Kings, and the Mets-Yankees game in the Bronx, where I will be. Johan Santana is pitching tonight. I called him and talked to him.
Did you give him a couple of tips? And
well, he wants
to
know about
again,
his
maybe?
Breaking ball. What did I think? Yeah, should he change his grip a little bit? But, you know, than that. Seriously, he's playing tonight. I congratulate him. First Mets no-hitter in 50 years or something like that. And they've had some great pitches there. Tom Seaver.
I was talking with Bruce Beck the last half hour. Both teams are going to see if they can put themselves back in first place.
Yankees are half a game out. Mets are a game and a half
game
out.
And a half, yeah.
But, you know, they both stayed there right near the top for the whole season. I mean, it's really exciting. And I talked to him about that. He said, you know, who do you root for, the Mets or the Yankees? And I said, I'm too smart to pick one in New York. But, you know, it's great to have two teams in contention. And then what I'd like to see is a Subway Series decided in the ninth inning. And New York will be the winner.
New York that would definitely be the winner.
But I'm going to go, and I'm taking tonight to the game, or tomorrow night, Saturday night. I'm not going to see Johan pitch tonight. But going tomorrow night, taking my youngest daughter, but also Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, who is in town. And for all
recovering
I know,
recovering from the Queen's 60th,
probably. He has never been reticent about having a good time. And his staff says he's really looking forward to it. For all I know, he's never been to a baseball game. But I thought it'd be fun. We'll take the subway up, And, you know, they have tubes there. He takes the subway. And this is a little different, but not much. And have a good time. You know, nothing wrong with a few beers and popcorn.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Weekend in the summertime. Baseball in New York City. And, of course, the Belmont thing should be huge tomorrow.
And I'd like to see the Devils win. Yeah. You know, I had hoped that the Rangers would win, but once the Rangers were out, then I root for the Devils.
All right, you have gotten on board with the governor and also Police Commissioner Kelly on this decriminalization of pot on the stop and frisk.
Well, if you remember, last year, Kelly directed officers to issue violations to individuals carrying small amounts of marijuana as opposed to arresting them. Whether you like it or not, there's something like 50,000 arrests for a small amount of marijuana. It's just a fact of life. It is still against the law, and under Governor Cuomo's proposed law, which would really codify that order into a law, the idea is if you have it in your pocket, it's not against the law. Or if you take it out, it is. Now, what happens is the cop says, empty your pockets.
And you take it out.
Take it out. What are you going to do? And then they arrest you. So it's just this way for small. You still will not be allowed on the governor's bill to smoke a joint in public. Certainly can't sell. You go to jail for that stuff. You get arrested. And none of that's going to change. But if no matter how you feel about it, the cops have enough things to do. And they can only do so many things. And in terms of what's most important, this is a relatively small thing, and I'm not suggesting that I'm in favor of legalizing
but
marijuana.
You have, haven't you? I mean, I asked the question rhetorically. The practical aspect here is that you've legalized it.
No, the practical, it's not going to change how many people carry it. It's simply going to, do you put it, and if you have a young kid and you put a criminal record, what does he do for the rest of his life? Now society's got a very big problem, okay? So, I mean, it's like for decriminalizing marijuana is you would take the economics out of selling it, and so the bad guys wouldn't make any money and they wouldn't sell it. Except the bad guys have families to feed. So what are they going to do? They will sell harder drugs, would be my theory. And that's why I have always been opposed to the decriminalization. I'm not sure that if it wasn't for that, I'd still go along with it, because I'm not so sure marijuana today isn't a lot stronger than it used to be. People say that. I don't know. I haven't, not my world these days. But the fact that I just think it will ratchet it up and they'll sell stronger drugs is a good reason not to decriminalize. But this really is just, it's sort of, let's get real of what the world is. Whether you like it or not, the cops should be doing other things. And 50,000 kids getting arrested.
You don't equate this with sort of the dumbing down of tests in our educational system.
No, I mean, in a perfect world, John, I would not change it. But it isn't a perfect world. If it's like, you know, if 95% of the people pay their taxes, the government can go after the 5% that don't. And that's really the business model for the IRS here in the United States. Greece, 95% of the people don't pay their taxes. Government cannot do anything about it. Just might as well understand, people aren't going to pay taxes, find some other ways to get revenue. So, you know, I happen to think the governor's right on this one. It's a policy we've had for the last year here in New York City. Crime continues to come down. Murder rate continues to come down here in New York City. You can't argue that we're walking away from the streets and that the bad guys are taking over. The amount of money that's involved in a tiny bit of marijuana, and the kids are going to carry it anyways.
Any truth to the thought that this is sort of an olive branch to those that want to kill the stop and frisk?
No, but it will certainly end some of the objections. And listen, Kelly has tried to, let me phrase it this way. If it's interesting when you talk to a minister and say, what does your congregation think? And they would generally tell you, not all but most, the older people want more stop and frisks. The younger people whose kids are getting stopped say it's an outrage. The truth of the matter is, it's the most effective technique we think we have to get guns off the streets. Where stop and frisk was put in and then taken out, murder rate fell and then went back up, not like Philadelphia. So there's a lot of evidence that it is. It's not the only tactic, but it is one of those tactics. And you don't want to have the courts or anybody say you can't do it. If it was your kid, you'd be upset. And I'd love to tell you that every police officer always follows the Marcus of Queensbury rules and his mismanners. That's not the real world. Most police officers are well-trained and follow the rules, but there's every once in a while, you know, and a cop out there in the streets, it's easy for you and I to say...
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more.
They're worried about who's got a gun, and you know, they want to go home to their families, too. And I think they do a good job, and they follow rules, and Kelly's trying to give them more training, and we're going to have more supervision at the precinct level. But we're not going to walk away from the technique. We're not going to lose control of our streets. And I wish there was another way. And Ray has said a number of times, if you got a better idea of how to get guns off the streets, tell us. And another basketball program in the afternoon is just not the answer.
There was a story in the paper, one of the papers this morning. I wish I had it in front of me. I do not. But basically the gist of it was a young man shot, I think, this week, and his friends came forward and said, you know what, if there had been more stop and frisks, maybe my buddy wouldn't be.
Right. I mean,
but they came forward. They were not coached to say that.
No. But I've had lots of people in for breakfast, ministers and rabbis and imams, sports people, as well as clergy, community leaders, and kids. And when you talk to them, you know, there are some that think it's the worst thing in the world. There are some that think we should stop everybody. Most are reasonably rational, don't like it, but don't have a better suggestion, and prefer what we're doing to the carnage that would have occurred had we not done this. If you use the average murder rate for the decade before we were in office, when Rudy brought crime down a lot, so we're not talking about two decades before. Would you compare that to the decade we just finished? I think it's like 6,000 more kids, more people would have been killed, and they're virtually all males and
your
kids.
Your reaction to the ACLU's app for iPhones for people that want to take pictures?
You know, in this day and age, you just, whether you like it or not, everything you do, there's always somebody that's
looking
got a camera looking at you. Whether it's the cameras, the security cameras on buildings, or everybody today has a motion picture camera in their hand. It's in your cell phone, and these are ubiquitous around the world. I guess what somebody would say, well, do the right thing. And the problem, of course, is that it's not clear what the right thing is all the time, and it's not clear that the camera shows what really happened. And it's not clear when you have a video that you show the whole video. There's a great example. I remember back with Occupy Wall Street, there was a video that went viral, as they say, on YouTube. And it showed some guy, I think it was, lying on the ground with a motorcycle or motor scooter, police motor scooter, over his legs. What they didn't show, if you looked at the whole video, was the cop parked the motor scooter, got off, the guy runs over, lies down on the ground, sticks his feet under it, and somebody takes the picture. So, you know, life ain't that
cut and dry all the time. Absolutely. All right, it's 8:30 in the morning here. And again, let me remind you, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, our number is easy, 800-321-0710. We'll be talking with you before we finish up right here. Let's talk to Joe Bartlett. Joe. 24 minutes before 9 o'clock, John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I'm curious of your reaction to the Wisconsin vote this week.
Everybody, a lot of the newspapers couched it in terms of its impact on Obama, Romney, and Wisconsin in November. I don't think this had anything to do with that. As a matter of fact, Walker, the Republican, won. But Obama is in the poll on the same day is ahead substantially.
Do you think there's a national implication to the whole government employee cost?
The first thing is it wasn't a referendum on Republican versus Democrat. It was to some extent a referendum on whether you should or should not recall a governor. There are a lot of people who didn't like Walker, according to the polls, but said, he was elected, he should be able to serve out his term, you shouldn't recall. And most states don't, or a lot of states don't have a recall provision. We don't have one here in the state, for example. So there's some of that. There is some of this feeling that public employees are have too generous compensation packages, benefits, as well as salary. And it's interesting, something like 35% of union members voted for Walker. But if you look, the statistics seem to say it's the private sector unions who are more concerned about business coming to the state because that's where they make their money with building or what.
Interesting when he took out the card check provision that the actual numbers dropped like two-thirds.
But that would happen any place. You know, I have always defended the unions, the public employees unions, in saying, look, they have their leadership has the the obligation to try to get as much money, best working conditions for as few hours as they can. That's what they're hired for. It is the government that gives them benefits that the public cannot afford.
That's where the finger should be wagged at.
Yeah, and then there's the argument, well, you know, the unions elect elected officials and have a lot to do at the polls, a lot of influence at the polls. Therefore, that's why. Well, the other side of the coin is then they complain about, well, there's private sector people that spend their own money, the super PAC idea, and it's not fair. In some sense, I think it is fair. The unions have always had the influence. They do it with bodies, phone banks, working at the polls, carrying signs, that sort of thing, and getting people, driving people to the polls. The other side's doing it with money. In some senses, it balances out. I have absolutely no view, I have no knowledge of whether the employees there are overpaid or underpaid. I think in New York City, you know, it's our pension system that's going to kill us, not the salaries. I've tried to make sure that our unionized workers, which is most of the 280,000 people that work in the city, and we've downsized about 8% in the last 10 years, the number of people that work for the city. It was about 320 or something, now it's 280, and some number like that. Maybe it was 310 down to 280, whatever. But anyways, I think that our salaries are competitive with other fire departments, police departments, education. When I came in, we were losing a lot of teachers to Nassau County and places like that, so we raised teachers' salaries dramatically, and that's no longer true. I'm sure they want more money. It'd be nice if we could afford it, and then we could really sit and see, well, you know, if a lot of people apply for a job, you don't have to pay more because you're getting lots of alternatives to pick good people. And if too few do, you're not paying enough. That's the way capitalism and business works. Our problem is that New York City pays the bills. Albany has been giving pension benefits for decades, and we don't have any say in it. And that leads to an abuse. There's no penalty for Albany to
just lay it on there.
Lay it on. They get some benefits, some work at the polls. Nobody's against it up there. But here in the city, we can't afford it, and we don't have a say. And so that's why we really do need pension reform. But I'd also say, you know, if you want good people, you got to pay. And I would argue that the fact that pretty much everybody agrees, New York City is a heck of a lot better than it's been in an awful long time. And part of that is because we have a workforce that's flexible, honest, works hard. Not everybody, but most of them.
What are you going to do if your taxi deal, your out-of-borough taxi deal, does not happen in the $1 billion you got on one of the lines in the budget?
It would mean a lot fewer workers, I'll tell you that. The business model for government is you hire people to provide services. If you are going to spend less, it's plain and simple, fewer people. And you say, we'll do it with attrition. In a down economy, attrition doesn't work. Nobody would leave. So it would be a very serious thing. My hope is that we will prevail. We think that we're right on the law. For technical reasons, we're not appealing the judge's decision in the next few weeks. Then the next process, that's when you would take the next legal step. And we're convinced that we will win and that we did it right. Hopefully the appeals court will see it that way. But if we were to lose and not be able to do this, number one, the public is hurt because they aren't going to have taxis in 5.5 boroughs. Think about that. And I can't believe people are fighting that. The taxi industry that's fighting more yellow medallions, this is ridiculous. I don't know of any other place in the world where you give a license to somebody, it becomes transferable, it goes from you get it for a dollar or something, and it's now worth $1 million, and then they're complaining about it. This is just an outrage. But the bottom line, all the studies showed there'd be plenty of demand for another 1,000 yellow cabs. We do want to be able to have more cabs that are handicap accessible, although that costs more money, and some people like them and some people don't, but we do have to find ways to have handicap get a decent taxi service as well. But, you know, if you were to lose all of this, it certainly would be difficult for the 2013 budget, which we're negotiating with the city council has to be done by the end of this month. It would be devastating for the 2014 budget, which would start a year later. And that one is already a big problem. Each year, if you go back, we one time saved, put away about $6 billion because I just kept looking and saying, this can't go on. There's this boom. Everybody was taking mortgages that obviously they're never going to be able to pay back. And the stock market kept going up and nothing goes up per straight line. And all of these crazy, the companies were buying, making loans, taking loans without covenants to speak of. And so we put away $6 billion, and we have now just in the 2013 budget and a little bit into the 2014 have used it up. There's really no more reserve to use up. Now, when you have a reserve, everybody says, oh, you can spend more money. Thank goodness we fought that battle, won it, and didn't. The trouble is now we don't have more money, and we're going to have to find a ways. For 2014 is going to be a bear, and we'll have to address that issue as soon as we get 2013 out of the way.
All right. I'm sure you're aware of the oversight of your FDNY test that has been mandated by Judge Garofas for now $350,000 for 50 days worth of work.
Hopefully another court will stop this craziness. The first thing that annoys me so much is Nick Scapetta worked as hard as anybody for 8 years to try to get more applicants from the more diverse group of applicants. We've done a very good job. The current group is much more diverse. It's a great job. And very few firefighters quit the job. They stay at least 20 years and some a lot longer. It's a dangerous job, but it's a good job, and I would just urge more people to apply. Now, it's a difficult process. You got to pass tests, and the list stays there for 4 years. They take from the top and that sort of thing. But the question is, you want equal opportunity or equal results? I believe that the test was never biased. The judge says, well, you never had experts to say that it wasn't biased. You know, we live in a world differently than back then, and I still think you want the smartest person coming through that door when you're in your house and you got a fire. And people say, oh, you know, it's the sons of firefighters that always get the jobs. The sons of firefighters get the jobs because they see their father and they know it's a good job, not because they have any advantage whatsoever. And the tests aren't, you have to know to put number 3 foam on a number 5 oil fire. They're basically tests that test your ability to react, because when you go through that door, you don't know what's going to be on their side. And the judge just doesn't seem to get that concept. And I don't want to blast him. We don't need another battle here. We let the courts settle it. But we've done nothing wrong. It's the greatest fire department in the world. And I have said, as long as I am mayor, I will not use race as a determinant of who gets a job at any place in the city. Period. End of story. And
I read that there was a threat that those that took the test might sue for back pay because, again, through in all of
those that didn't, I think, well,
those that didn't get the job would be able to sue.
Yeah, but
as if they had gotten
I think
the job.
It was that, I don't remember exactly. I think it's those that
it was insane is what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it just can't. It's equal opportunity rather than equal results. Race, we should be race blind. It has no point in this. And, you know, if some groups, if people wanted the job, that's great. If people don't want the job, that's their choice. We have an obligation maybe to everybody to explain how good a job it is and that's available and how you apply. But after that, it's the marketplace and freedom of choice. And this judge just sees it differently. And, just let him, he's made his case, and now we're going to have our case in court.
All right. Governor Cuomo, surprising, I think a lot of people said that the casino deal over at Aqueduct was not going to happen, and now he's looking for alternatives, and he's talking about the Javits Center, a casino, hotel, convention center, good, bad, or indifferent, in your mind?
Look, well, I've always thought something The closer the city it is, the easier it is to get to, and probably the more popular. And this city is big enough to have more than one. And we have lots of different arts venues, for example, and lots of different concert halls and lots of different stadiums and that sort of thing. We could easily, this city could attract business to fill lots of different ones. I think there's two issues here. One, you got to give the governor credit for trying. I mean, none of these things are easy, and there's always going to be lots of pluses and minuses, and people like it and people that don't, and it takes lots of years of, you know, land use and regulation and changing the Constitution, in this case, to have gambling. I have always never been a great fan of gambling as a way to raise money for the state. It doesn't really work, to my way of thinking, very well. If you go in, and it never helps the local neighborhood, go to Atlantic City. Right around Atlantic City, they never benefited from that. And that's true of Las Vegas, true of every one of these places. And in this case, if you're going to have it, then why not have it in New York City? And then if you want to tax it and use the money to help disadvantaged neighborhoods across the state, that's the ways to do it. Don't put it in the disadvantaged neighborhoods because nobody's going to go there. And it's starting, incidentally, gambling's not the cash cow it used to be.
No, not
There's
at all.
It's gambling every place. Every state has them. And we have these this lottery and the slot machines. It's not a slot machine. It's a lottery machine. Spammy. I mean, only a legal mind could make the difference from you and me, from a human being's mind. They're one and the same. You just got to, if you're going to have it where the population is, then you'll get the most money. If you want to tax it, okay, that's what we have to do to help people. Take that money and spend that money in the places that don't. But I come back to, it's a long process, and you got to give the governor credit for trying.
Also on the west side, while we're there, at least metaphorically, the Enterprise landed on the stern of the Intrepid. Very cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Very good thing.
Yeah.
For the city and that institution.
Yeah, they're really looking for a place to put it rather than just leave it there. I think they were talking about across the street. I don't know who owns the land and whether that's possible or not. You know, I've always thought the aircraft carrier should have fighter planes on it and that sort of thing. But this is good for the city to have it. And if you can put it across the street, it'll bring some more business to the neighborhood and good for the museum.
Your museum, your 9/11 museum. I understand that you and the Port Authority have come to some sort of an agreement.
Without jinxing anything, we're working on it.
I see you got your fingers crossed.
or in a Star of David, whatever works.
Whatever's going to work on this one. All right, we got a full bank of phones here, Mr. Mayor. What do you say I take a break and we will get right back to it and to you and to them right here. I need to tell everybody we're sponsored by Heart. All right, Mr. Mayor, here we go. 6 minutes before 9 o'clock in the morning, and we got a full bank of phones here this morning. We're going to start with line number 3, which happens to be Mary. Mary, you got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing such a great job. I live in Nassau County, but I have family in Queens and Manhattan.
Hopefully they're happy.
Yes, they are, except for school taxes. Lotto was put into effect for keeping our school taxes down.
They use that, Mary, every single time. We'll have a lotto or gambling, and we'll devote the money for schools. Who's going to vote against
it? It's automatic.
It's just automatic. And so if they have been sending $10 to schools and they get $10 new revenue from lottery, they take away the old 10, they put it in with a new 10, and they say, see, we're complying with the law. And as a matter of fact, they probably only send 8 over instead of the 10. It is
maddening, isn't it, Mary?
It's maddening, Mary, and it's not just here, it's every place. Because if you say, oh, well, it's for kids, who's going to be against it?
Kids and senior citizens. That's always the line. That's always where it's going.
Well.
Mary, thanks for the telephone call. Let me go to Lou out in Queens. Hello, Lou.
Well, speaking of kids and senior citizens and middle-class taxpayers, I'm really offended by the enormous amount of budget cuts that it looks like our library system may take. And I don't understand why it's always on the chopping block.
Lou, whether it's always on the chopping block or not, the question is, do we always come through? And I think libraries have been they've not gotten as much money as we would all like them to have. But the real world is we have to sit there. We are spending $8+ billion a year on pensions this year. And 10 years ago, that was $1.5 billion. And the question is, what do you do? And there are constituencies for libraries. There are constituencies for fighting crime and a firehouse in every neighborhood and all of this stuff. And in the end, wait and see what the budget is. And we finished all the negotiations with the city council, which is pretty much the same every year. There are a lot of things that are always, everything, I suppose, is on the chopping block, and then you have to come up with some ways to balance it. People don't want to pay more taxes, and they do want to have more services, and they want to cut waste, and their definition of waste is your services, but not mine, and it's the same game. But I think our libraries are still here, the best in the world, and it's because of city funding. And we'll continue, and some state and funding as well.
You know, I think that was demonstrated with Joe Loda's comments of last week on the MTA that he's thinking of maybe a fare hike in next year, not to fix the service, not to improve the service, not to put a new train on the track or a subway station redone, but to pay pensions.
I have an idea. Why don't we come up with some plan that would raise money for mass transit and dissuade people from driving their cars into Manhattan so the streets wouldn't be plugged?
I don't know why you hadn't come up with that before.
I can't imagine. I'll bet you Albany has that as their idea. All kidding aside, I'm very sympathetic to Loda. You're asking him to run the railroad and not giving him the money. And incidentally, when it comes, if he says, well, I'm going to cut back the number of employees, nobody wants to do that. Well, I'm going to pay the employees less or ask them to co-pay or something in the pensions. Well, they don't want to do that. Loda's the guy in the middle. And, you know, that's why he gets the big bucks. And I think I've said this before, I think it was an inspired choice by Andrew Cuomo to pick him. But he still needs money, and it's still up to Albany. And if we're going to have mass transit here in this regional area, it is the regional representatives in Albany, Assembly and Senate, that have to go to Albany and scream, enough of this. We are going to get some revenue so that we can invest in the future and have more reliable service, more pleasurable service, more frequent service, all of that. And that will bring more riders in, which will bring more revenue. So things would get better if you made the kind of investments that we should be making. And Joe's trying to make the investments at the same time, trying to pay the bills. And the bottom line is his bills are going up faster than his revenue, and something's got to give. You just can't write checks without money in the bank.
All right, Mr. Mayor, what do you say? You say good morning to Daniel in the Bronx.
Good morning, Daniel in the Bronx.
Hi, good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg.
Hi.
I have a question, a lot of interesting topics that you're discussing today, but one, the first one about the legalization of, or decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. So my question is really twofold. One, I read a study that was done in Harvard, I think in 2007, that said that THC from marijuana could actually be used as a potential cure for cancer. I was wondering, number one, what are your thoughts on that particular study, and whether you think, you know, we should, you know, look at, you know,
medical marijuana?
Well, I'm not an oncologist, so I can't give you a professional opinion on whether any of that's true. There are an awful lot of studies. Some people go one direction, some people go another. Generally, this argument for medical marijuana gets co-opted by those that just want to smoke a joint and get high. And it may very well be one of these things where there is benefit for people that are really sick. The problem is society has not shown yet, I don't think, that they can figure out how to keep it from morphing into a medical cure to a recreational thing. There are some states where they have medical marijuana, and it'd be interesting to see. I don't know the results. You hear some stories, but whether they're conventional wisdom or not, there's been abuses, there haven't been abuses, they want to expand it, they don't, so I just don't know.
Legislatures seem to want to provide for it, and then they don't want to distribute it, and they drag their feet.
Everybody wants to be, for those that, you know, the recreational people have votes, and the medical people have votes, and the lose control of the streets people have votes.
Have yourself a good weekend. Enjoy the baseball game tomorrow.
Great sports this weekend. Go Mets and Yankees.
Have a good weekend. We'll talk with you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Always look forward to my guest coming up. After-